on this episode of Japan 2.0.
And it was just so fun. Like, they were having like a lot of fun. And the guy next to me who, like, goes to every single game, it seemed like they have towels. Mm-hmm. Every player has their own special towel. And he was, like, waving it around. They have these, like, big balloons that they take and wave. And then they let them go. So in the seventh
inning. Very interactive, right?
So interactive and so fun.
Hello and welcome to Japan 2.0. I have a very, very special guest, a longtime favorite guest of Japan 2.0, who is sitting here with me on the one and only Suma Beach, Japan's finest beach. We're in front of a pile of decrepit seaweed and garbage because it has the spot with the least amount of wind. It's the things we do for our podcast here. And our special guest is none other than my best friend from eighth grade, Jonathan
Thaddeus
Zimickley. How you doing, John?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show for my second time ever.
Second time. Last one was almost 3 years ago.
It was, yeah. And, August 2016.
Recorded in the same, pretty much area. Same spot. Yeah, same area on the beach. And John's now a vet in Japan. He's his second trip. And this trip, I think, is really, really interesting that he took, and I'm pretty excited to have him on because the most requests we get are about people kind of planning trips and traveling, and they ask a lot of questions of what it's like to kind of be a tourist here. And the last time I was a tourist here was around, like, 8 years ago or so, so that information I have is pretty old, you know, before the days of Wi-Fi and Airbnb and things like that. So oftentimes it's a little difficult for me to answer. People will say, like, best hotels in Kansai, and I'm not really sure because, you know, I live here and I don't often have to get a hotel, or if my friends come with me, they stay with me, so I'm not really recommending hotels that much. So these kinds of things, I think John is experienced, and he's been with tour groups and done a lot of kind of the classic things that Matt or myself have never done. In a lot of ways, I think in 10 days he's done more, seen more sides of Japan maybe than I have in 6 years. So yeah, that's why we're having John here. How's your trip been?
Good.
We're all good. Yeah.
Yeah. This year I came as part of a study abroad program through Texas State University.
Represent.
Go Bobcats.
Represent.
David is an alum of Texas State University.
That I am.
Nobody knew that.
Never said that dark secret on here. Yeah. John, just to give a quick, we've known each other since eighth grade. We went to university in Michigan together as well at Central Michigan University. And then we went off and kind of did our own thing for a bit, and we rekindled our friendship in San Marcos, Texas, of all places, for 2 years. And then I came out to Japan after that.
Yep.
Yep.
And I've been teaching at Texas State for the last 10 years or so.
That's crazy.
Which sounds crazy.
10 years?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. 2009 was when I was hired. And it's 2019 now. Uh-huh. So I teach in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And 3 years ago, when I came to visit David, I was also here while another faculty member from Texas State was also visiting Japan. We didn't see each other because he was in Okinawa. And when we both came back to the States, we talked about how great Japan was. And he's half Japanese, and he has family in Okinawa, so he was, you know, he'd been learning the language and learning a lot about the culture, and we just had a lot to talk about. And then he had kind of a idea to do a study abroad trip, and he asked me to be on it because I had gone before. And so it was pretty cool to be on that short list of people that he wanted to team up with to build the study abroad program.
Yeah, I was able to meet up with you guys in Kyoto, and it's really cool to see so many passionate people. A lot of people live here for a long time, I think. It kind of worn or numb, or you start to find gripes about things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool to see Japan through people who are so passionate, you know.
Yeah, we have 13 students that are on the trip. They just left today, actually. So we've been going to, we spent 5 days in Tokyo and then 4 days in Kyoto. We've been seeing shrines and temples and Tokyo Tower.
Quick day in Osaka, too.
Yeah, quick day in Osaka. We're just like, you know, in Akihabara. We went to all kinds of, like, nooks and crannies. Yeah.
So these are, like, people always ask, you know, you're here for 10 days around total trip. So people, I think we did a 10-day itinerary and a 14-day itinerary. But yeah, people always want to know like where to go, and this is like the most common path of Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't come to Kobe, but you're in Kobe.
Yeah,
and people sometimes throw in another kind of Nagoya, or they might do like a kind of countryside, kind of middle of nowhere, Hokkaido, throw in another place like that. So
yeah,
you've kind of done the probably most typical path, which is one reason I kind of want to talk with you.
Yeah.
Let's kind of start in the beginning. So you guys flew into Tokyo.
Yes.
I was really excited for you to go there because it's my favorite place in Japan, and you had not been before.
Right.
You'd only, last time we came here, we were in Kyoto for a couple of days. We were in Osaka, but we mostly stayed in Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
But you've seen me in Seoul before when I lived there.
Yeah.
I feel like kind of Tokyo and Seoul are like fair comparisons, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to compare where I live to Seoul because it's just such a small, rural place. We're on the beach right now, you know?
Yeah.
I think Tokyo and Seoul are
comparable.
Yeah, kind of like competitors, I think, in Asia in some ways. So, yeah, kind of curious. What did you think about Tokyo?
Well, when I came here 3 years ago, I felt like my idea of Japan was a little bit, like, stereotypical, like, robots, lights, you know, like, what will Japan be like? I just assumed all the, like, bad stereotypes.
I'll put a link into your first podcast so they can hear how you've changed, maybe. Yeah.
And so, like, when I came here, I was, like, totally amazed that there were, like, there wasn't Wi-Fi in a lot of places. They didn't take, is it still a cash-based system? Like, very traditional. Like, a lot of things that I thought about Japan was not true. And so I was a little bit, like, surprised about that, but then also I was like, well, that's also because I didn't go to Tokyo. Like, I feel like in Tokyo all that stuff is there,
cutting it.
And so I was excited to see that when I did go this year. So when we got to Tokyo, I mean, it was it didn't meet those expectations either, even having gone to Tokyo, just because they're stereotypes, you know. And like, you get, like, you told me to go to a robot restaurant and things like that, which I think I'd see those things there. But just everyday life in Tokyo was, I mean, it was awesome. We stayed in near a block away from Akihabara, and that was really cool.
Tell people what Akihabara is, or so why you'd want to go there.
Yeah, it's like, I guess you know more the history of it.
Yeah, I want to hear from Mike.
Just the anime scene, like, a lot of video games, a lot of like floors and rooms and alleyways of just those like capsule machine.
Yeah, gacha machines.
And then old school arcades are there. And a lot of those girls in the cutesy dresses.
Yeah. It's kind of otaku, you know, nerd culture heaven.
Yeah.
City that never sleeps.
Yeah. And I actually hadn't gone there for 2 or 3 days into the trip because we were doing so many other things. Like, the first day we got there, we went and just kind of walked around Tokyo and went to the fish market. And it was like an all-day tour.
Tsukiji fish market, yeah.
Yeah, and it was raining all day. So it was like kind of a hard way to start the tour.
Yeah.
Because we're on foot all day.
So if you come in late June, that's kind of the start of the rainy season.
Okay.
Beginning June is like awesome. It's one of the good times to be out here. It's a little warm. But yeah, late June, July is not a great time to be in Japan for rainy season. So yeah, you're getting a little taste of mild rainy season. So.
Yeah. Well, we went to the fish market. Tons of people all around there. Foods. I had a cubed egg. Like, they call it, I guess, a Japanese omelet.
Tamago, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Tamagoyaki, yeah.
And it was
a little bit sweet.
Yeah.
So
it was good.
I love it.
Yeah. It was great. And then, we walked around there.
I saw some of the students were eating the baby octopus on the sticks.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Did you get into that?
I didn't. No, I didn't.
Why not?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But also, it was like right after breakfast. So there were certain things that I don't think I'd ever eaten octopus that early in the morning.
So another thing you talked about was you wrote me and said, like, man, what's up with Japanese breakfast?
Yeah, that was crazy. Cause like,
why don't you like Japanese breakfast? I don't either, but let's hear it.
Like five varieties of fish soups, like different, and fish. And it was just like hot, and noodles.
Is that your hotel usually, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So we stayed at Hotel My Stays. Little plug for them.
Oh, you stayed at them in Tokyo too?
Yeah.
Oh, throughout the whole trip. Okay.
And the breakfast was, it was interesting. Well, they had like the rice, hot rice soup, I guess, not soup, but there's hot water with rice in it. Yep. And then you put different items into it. I just stuck kind of with yogurt and cereal, but I also branched out and did try the, egg. I guess it's like a raw egg, but a soft boiled egg, and put it in the soup. And it was actually very good with the rice.
So your students thought you're kind of strange for liking that egg.
Yeah.
Is that the one they're talking about?
Yeah.
It was just the half boiled egg.
Yeah.
We call it tamago onsen here. Onsen is like the bath. So you throw it in the hot bath.
I see.
Kind of halfway.
Yeah. That's good.
I think they're incredible.
Yeah.
For a lot of Westerners, the idea of a raw egg is creepy, right?
Yeah, for sure. I saw them in there. One of the kids was taking shots with them because they put them all in different little like shot glasses.
Yeah,
and he was just like, "Oh, eggs for breakfast!" And he just kept shot. But he was definitely one of the only people eating them.
Huh.
I went through and had the rice noodles, and I just had that separate, or the rice, hot rice bowl, and just had that because I thought that was the meal, and it was terrible because it was so bland. And I was like, this is for breakfast. Like, it's not sweet. It's not salty. It's just no flavor. It's just rice and hot water. And it was bad. But you're supposed to put the egg in it. And I got addicted to that by the end of the... Because they had it at my stays.
The egg in the rice?
Yeah. Tokyo and in Kyoto. And that became my favorite dish in the morning, actually.
So, Japanese breakfast. You pour onto it.
But the fish and the soup and stuff. And also, like...
the classic breakfast is, like, a salmon, dry kind of... cold salmon sometimes, miso soup and rice. Like, that's, like, the quintessential, like, standard breakfast, you know? So, yeah, I think you got some derivatives of that.
Yeah, I've just never had fish for breakfast, so it's hard to...
And I totally agree. Like, I didn't eat fish before living in Asia at all. Sushi was easier for me because it didn't have, like, fishy taste.
Okay. But
cooked fish definitely took me a couple of years to kind of get into.
Yeah.
I would say Japan does it better than the neighboring Asian countries, in my opinion. So living here really actually started making me like it more. But I do, same as you, draw the line. Like, before 11 a.m., I have a hard time eating fish. Like, I can do it. It's just not as good as cereal or yogurt.
Most of what I had was the yogurt and, like, fruit. I love that they had all lots of fresh fruit in the morning and stuff.
I think you bring up a good point, though, of, like, being in a different place. You get this acquired taste for things. You know, at first, you might really hate them, but you got to keep trying them. And at the end of the day, it's, like, something totally different for your palate. And I found myself kind of getting, like, not even used to it, but, like, obsessed with it. Like, umeboshi is, like, this pickled plum thing here. I remember hating it so much, and now it's, like, I crave it. And it's kind of changed my, like, flavor profile because it is this super sour thing, you know? I appreciate more, like, kind of bitter, sour taste now because I've been eating that more.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how your palate changes, you know?
Yeah.
Even just in 10 days.
Hopefully you're ready to try new, especially if you're traveling. Like, you kind of have to be open-minded about things. And so I was proud of our students. Like, they all tried different things, and they tried the fish. Like, even if they didn't love it, like, they took a few bites, you know, and that's all you can ask
for. Like I said, they're eating these baby octopus taco. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty cool. So, the breakfasts, Akihabara, Fish Market. Uh-huh. Fish Market's a really famous one, and we never talked about it. You didn't go really, really early and see the tuna auctions, right? Because that's the
No.
So that's, at least they've changed it. I'm not totally sure how they do it now. But you had to, like, book a hotel really close to there because the fish auctions start around 4 a.m., which is before the subway starts. So you can't take a subway to go there.
Mm.
So with these fish auctions, have you ever seen a video of it?
No.
They're really busy. All these guys are yelling, and the fish go for, like, you know, $100,000, $200,000.
Wow.
Oh, they're very expensive. So just come watch these kind of ballers, big restaurant owners throw down money. It's pretty interesting. I've never done it myself, but the sushi there is really good. Did you have sushi there?
No. I because it was kind of early-ish in the morning, around 11. And so, honestly, I just wanted coffee. But they did have those omelets, Japanese omelets that I had.
There,
That was good.
At the fish market?
Yeah, at the fish market. Okay. Students were trying this meat.
Wagyu. Yeah, Wagyu just means Japanese beef.
Oh,
but I do find it to be of a very high quality in general. I love Japanese beef.
Yeah.
It's hit or miss for people. Some people think it's a little fatty. Fat's blended in. It's marbled. It's never, you don't get like big chunks of fat or anything. But yeah.
They loved it.
The taste is quite different.
So, yeah, it was
fish
great.
Market on
that was our
day.
First. Yeah, that was our first like intro to Tokyo because it was the first full day of our trip, and so a lot of students were just really excited just to be there. The energy was there, and they were just happy to be in Tokyo.
Do you find I found this when I like went to Europe? I remember the first place I go to is like the best, and then like the last kind of place I go to, it's not as good. Like I started off in London, and to this day, if I ever had to leave Japan, I feel London's the place I want to live.
Yeah,
and we finished that trip in Hungary, and. I have no desire to go back to Hungary. And I do wonder if it was reversed. Yeah.
I think students will remember Tokyo more than Kyoto for sure.
That's really interesting because in Japan, at least where I live out here in Kansai, I think more Kyoto has this magical place in a lot of people's hearts and they really love it. And a lot, Tokyo is like 50-50. A lot of people really hate Tokyo or they love it. But Kyoto is kind of unanimously loved by everyone.
Yeah.
So I do wonder. I guess it's something you should consider on your trip. A lot of people do start in Tokyo for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But
And I don't know if they would like it any more or less if we switched the. And we talked about that in our debriefing thing the other day. Like, should we do, you know,
I always
and then Tokyo?
So I always recommend working your way up to Tokyo.
Okay.
Because I do think if you're going to any other city, maybe besides Kyoto, because I think Kyoto personally brings a lot of unique things that Tokyo doesn't have in terms of like cultural things.
Yeah.
But any other city you're going to go to besides Kyoto, it's just going to kind of it's going to lose in the competition of a cooler, better city, you know?
Yeah.
So I think to appreciate those small nuances, you'd want to go to Osaka or go to Nagoya or go to Sapporo before you go to Tokyo.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people start in Tokyo and I'm not sure.
Our hotel in Kyoto was way better than the one in Tokyo.
Same
so
franchise.
So for that reason... students, I think, appreciated the Kyoto better because of our hotel.
Yeah. Oh, we'll save Kyoto when you get kind of get there. We'll go in order. So you did the fish market. You did Akihabara. What else did you do?
Then we did. We went over to Takashite.
Takashite. Oh, street. That's the Harajuku Street. Yep.
Yeah.
Takashita. Yep.
Takashita. Yep. Yeah. That was really cool, just because it was a crowded street, and it was raining and stuff, but we went to really, like, interesting, like, stores there, because there was, like, a huge cotton candy machine maker thing, like, you know, it's like, everything's, like, kind of cartoony there a little bit.
The street's marketed towards high school girls, so it's like that's Japanese high school girl heaven, like bright colors, sweet crepes.
Yeah.
So you get a crepe.
I just saw them. Yeah,
very,
yeah.
Very
and
famous for crepes.
A
there,
lot
yeah.
of like cafes, like animal cafes there too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like chinchilla cafes and stuff.
Yeah, totally. I love Harajuku, that neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
Takashita Street to me is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to go on. It's like I remember the first time I went there. I was like, okay, this is cool. I never want to come here again, but like, I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've been dragged back before, but
the
neighboring
temple
area,
right by there.
So you went to Meiji Jingu, which I think is awesome. It's really famous. I don't think it's overrated. I love it. And I see you're there. I'm looking at photos that remind John. He's there on a rainy day. I think Meiji Jingu on a rainy day is awesome. It reminds me of being in like Totoro or being in a Studio Ghibli movie.
Yeah.
It's so green in such a big city, right?
Yeah.
And you'll just be in Harajuku, like this crazy crowded area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you walk 5-10 minutes. That and it's like you're surrounded by nature. The trees are so old and big, right?
Yeah, I like that temple just because there was a lot of different, like, I guess stops along the way.
Sake
as you
casks.
Get there.
The sake casks are cool, right?
Yeah, those are really cool.
And the actual torii, like the gate, is massive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So big.
I have a picture of it somewhere.
It's really natural. They, you know, usually they're red. They cup it like a natural color.
Mm-hmm.
But I go there all the time. And right outside of there, it's really cool. It's right next to Yoyogi Park, which is the biggest park in Tokyo, or one of the biggest. And that's where they do the rockabilly dancers. Out dancing, and that's where I feel like on a Sunday you can kind of see some of the street fashion stuff, the girls dressed up, but But yeah, I love that area. But the neighboring areas near that street you're talking about are Urahara. It's mm-hmm. called, like, the backside of Harajuku. And that's, like, where the real, you know, if you want to see, like, the fashion and stuff, that's where that is, that street. Yeah, so that's Omotesando, which is nearby there. And I had told you, you should probably see Shibuya Crossing if you're in Tokyo once. You should go see it. I think
some
you guys
went and
thought,
liked it.
Yeah, that this cross, because they have so many crossings.
Yeah.
You thought maybe this was
I
the one.
I thought this was it, yeah.
So there's this Omotesando Harajuku Crossing area where there's these, like, shards of glass leading mm-hmm. up to, like, some department store.
It's a famous Instagram spot, apparently. People were saying, like, okay.
There you go.
And yes. we went to, like, a Nike store there. We went to just kind of, a lot of really nice shops along that area, too, which I think was fun.
Yeah.
The
kids, they buy stuff or they in the shopping area?
Yeah, they bought
Did they know,
some
like, we're going, like, Harajuku's, like, the fashion district?
Yeah,
they knew
yeah, some of them did. Like, some students that were very, like, more into, like, pop culture and fashion really were excited about that area a lot. Others were just taking it all in, like, as much as they could. So that was cool. That was a rainy day, but it was a very good, like...
So, yeah. One critique some people have of Japan is that it's, like, just... Some people, it's a positive. It's, like, consumerism heaven.
Uh-huh.
People think it's, like, the best shopping you're going to get in the world.
Oh,
okay. But other people will say that in Japan there's not much to do but really eat out and shop. Do you feel that's kind of true? Compare it to maybe other places you've been?
Maybe
within the U.S. or...
I think, like, if you consider, like, hiking and, like, stuff and biking and stuff like that, like, there's that to do as well. And there's the beach scene, too, that, you know, is over, you know, could be overlooked when you just say it's just about that stuff. But I think I wouldn't say that necessarily.
Okay.
But
sometimes when I'm showing people around, I do feel it's hard. It's a fine line between, like, doing, like, touristy things, which aren't, you know, consumerism, right? You're
right, right.
temples and you're seeing sumo and sights and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not really what people do who live there.
Mm-hmm.
I find often
if
you're showing people the local life, it is just, like, hanging
shopping
out at cafes or you are looking
uh-huh.
at the, you know, some of the crazier fashion Japan's famous for.
Uh-huh.
Maybe this is not a travel thing, but more of a living here thing, you know, that people sometimes critique Japan for.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I do feel aware of it when I'm showing people around.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm thinking, like, all right, I'm going to show them, like, what we do here, I do often feel like it does involve spending money.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, well, I mean, the U.S., like, what would be something you would do there that you wouldn't do here? You know?
I guess.
Like, every time
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I
obviously love it here. I've heard people say, like, there's just more parks, and you just hang out at parks more in the U.S.
I wouldn't say that, because, like, just my opinion.
Yeah.
But, like, when somebody visits the U.S., or visits me in San Marcos, Texas, it's like, we're going to go to, like, the river, we're going to go shopping, we're going to go eating. I mean, that's just what you do when you have a visitor around.
I think,
so, like,
when I go on vacation anywhere in the world, all I want to do is eat and shop and see some see sights. But, like, that to me is fun. That's what vacation is.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess because, like, maybe Japan is, like, does have a lot of, you know, maybe in Tokyo especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of shopping you could do that people.
Do you feel things in general are more expensive here than back home?
No, because I feel like all the yen I have is play money.
Yeah.
So, and we've talked about that, how, like, it just doesn't feel like I'm really spending money. And especially with the change, like, I feel like it's just change, but it could be, like, $30 in my pocket.
Yeah.
And so I will just be more willing to spend money.
You should
here.
Say, like, your hotel and stuff is paid for.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't, you don't know that exactly. But, you know, like,
budget,
meals or buying clothes or souvenirs or
it
whatever.
It can be. But I think you can find those quick spots too, you know, that aren't as expensive.
Yeah.
One joke that went around on our, we were online, the app, within our group, was that I was picking all the expensive things to do because I wanted to go to the robot restaurant and I wanted to.
Robot restaurant, how much is that?
That was like $80.
Okay, yeah.
And then I wanted to see if anybody wanted to go to Universal Studios, even though I didn't really want to go. I just wanted to go to Osaka, but
that's
Universal
like $80
Studios,
too, right?
Yeah, another $80.
What about baseball? You went to a baseball
and then baseball,
game.
That
how
was like
that?
$32, $33.
Okay.
So they were just joking, like, if you want all the expensive things, ask John. But, like, there are cheap things to do, and there are, I mean...
Well, these kids are 18 or 19, too.
Yeah.
In our 30s, so.
But part of our trip wasn't just that stuff. Like, we went to Edelman, which is a obviously a pretty big PR company in the U.S., and they have a Japan satellite campus. And so we went to Edelman, Japan, and the students learned, like, what it's like to work at a PR agency in Japan, and that was pretty enlightening. And then...
How did you feel it'd be different from back home?
Well, one thing they said... So I do a lot with, like, virtual reality and digital technology at Texas State, and one question I had was, have they ever worked with a client in a PR setting where they use virtual reality or augmented reality to create a campaign or something like that? And they said that the Japanese were less likely to take a risk like that because it's not really a proven way yet, and they want to see it done in the U.S. well and then do it better. And he said that's kind of like the Japanese way, and I thought that was an interesting... It
goes against certain stereotypes of the technology for, like cutting edge stuff, right? Yeah. A lot of that's more hard on the hardware side here rather than software. With those, you know, famous Sony, Mitsubishi, all those old companies, right? So they're still... I mean, they are falling behind in that relatively. But, yeah, they're still pretty good hardware. But, yeah, software. I mean, the U.S. is really killing it in a lot of fronts.
Yeah, and so, like, it is a little different here in Japan rather than in the U.S. They showed some, like, examples that, like, have worked and, you know. And, yeah, that was eye-opening. And then we went to the Wall Street Journal Japan Bureau, which was very interesting because it's a whole floor that they have there. But... they only have about 10 or 12 actual, like, journalists that work there, and only about 3 of them are Japanese. The rest are American, and so they're kind of like the... And I asked, like, how is the Japanese, like, readership different from the U.S.? And they said, actually, we don't really know that because they're more focused on reporting. Yeah. Reporting from Tokyo about, like, things like the trade war or whatever, like, things that affect Japan,
right,
but not to necessarily a Japanese audience. So, anyway...
Yeah,
it was interesting to be in a newsroom kind of.
So you went to one of the things I recommended you to do, and I hadn't done. And I was a little nervous since I hadn't done it. I was just trusting what I heard from other people. Was check out the Sumo neighborhood.
Yes.
What was that area called? You remember?
That was Ryogoku.
Ryogoku. Yep. And was that one of the four things you did? How was it?
Yeah, I looked it up a little bit before I went, and it was only about a 2-minute train ride over.
Oh, it's close to Akihabara.
Very, very close. Yeah. Okay. So it was a great... low-hanging fruit to try it out. So we, I did some research before I went. It said in order to go to one of the practice areas, which they call stables, you should call ahead and see if they have, like, viewings where you can go and watch them. And I was like, I'll just go and wing it. And yeah. So...
A quick aside there is I think you guys kind of found out that you need reservations for a lot of things in Tokyo, especially.
Yeah.
Because it's such a big city.
Yeah.
Luckily, they're pretty English-friendly in most of these things, so...
Yeah, so we didn't make any reservations ahead of time. Our thought was that we'll just go find one. We were coming a little bit late. You're supposed to go early in the morning and sit and watch them for the whole practice, so like a 3-hour-long, like, session.
Dedicated.
Which we...
Do you know around what time that is?
About 6 or 7, they said, and then it gets out around 10. So my idea was let's go at 10 and just watch them get out of their thing. So we got there at 10:45 because some people were late. so then we went to 3 different stables, and one of them had a big sign in the front that said, do not come in. If you're coming to watch, we don't allow that. Another one said, you can come in only if you're accompanied with someone who knows Japanese, and none of us did. And then the third one was a stable that didn't have any sign or anything. It was just like basically a building, and we just rang the doorbell and waited, and nobody came to the
door. How did you know where these stables were?
Google Maps.
Okay. You just type in Sumo stable?
I didn't type, it was pretty prominent, so like I just zoomed in on the city, it said stable.
Cool.
So there were 3 within walking distance, and we just walked around, and we considered it a bust. We were like, great, we didn't see any sumos, we didn't do anything. So we went back to the station, and there's this huge arena where they practice and or where they do competitions. But there were no competitions. Like if you go to see, it's like kind of like a stadium. Yeah. You know, if you go to a wrestling match, like it's going to cost a bunch of money, and it's on at a night time, you know, kind of thing. And so we're just like, let's just walk around the stadium and see. So we went to the gift shop, which was you know, very small, and we're just walking, and we saw a bunch of pictures, like a museum, we saw pictures, and they had cardboard cutouts so you could take pictures by, so we did that. So
trying to make the most of it.
Definitely, and so we're just, like, kind of, like, ready to go back, because it was kind of a bust, and then one of the students looked up, and he saw a big... robed guy walking by, and he's like, that's a sumo. And so we looked, and he like ran after him and chased it, or just kind of like wave flagged him down, and we noticed they're just walking around, and we weren't really looking for them to walk around, and they were. So we got our picture next to one of them, and they're so nice. We just said, hey, I just yelled, sumo. And he was like, yeah, I'm a sumo. Or he didn't say that. Yeah. He just said, yeah, sumo. And so
a lot of them these days aren't Japanese. They're like Mongolian and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, he was so happy that we recognized him, that we wanted to take a picture with him. He shook our hands. And so then we kept walking back, and there was another sumo walking down the street, and then there was another one.
Is it outside the stadium?
Outside the stadium, yeah.
Do you see him on a bike? Oh, I think it's one of the coolest things to see a big guy on a bike.
No, we did not, unfortunately. But they were just walking around the subway. They're just doing their thing, regular people, right? And I just thought it was so cool. And then we went and got some chunkanabe, which is the traditional sumo food meal. Yeah.
And it's, you think sumos, they get big, that they might eat a lot of fattening food or something that, right? But they actually these incredibly
it's
healthy
like a hot pots,
so many vegetables,
yes,
right?
Yes, cabbage, mushrooms, like, and just a little bit of meat in there, but yeah, mostly vegetables.
The meat's kind of like a meatball. Isn't it like a processed chicken or something?
There's some meatballs in there. There's a little bit of like fish type of stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And so we found this restaurant on the corner, and we just asked Chunkanabe, and they said, oh yeah. So they took us to the back room to an elevator. The guy pushed us all into an elevator, pressed the floor.
How many people were with you, would you say?
Five of us.
So sometimes in Japan, if you want to go like cooler places, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to have, I would say, more than four people. Not a lot of places can, like, accompany that, you know? So, anyway, yeah, you had four or five people.
Yeah, we had...
in the elevator.
Yeah, four or five people in the elevator. And then we
went up
to the fourth floor. They took us to a table, and we sat down, and all I asked for was the chunkanabe. Yeah. They gave us a menu, and they said you can only have it if two people share one order.
Yeah.
But we said, can all five of us share one order?
It's an odd number, right?
Yeah, it was very frowned upon. And they were like, no, only, you know, they were very adamant about.
Mm.
And so...
there's certain dishes here, like sukiya or nabe, where you can't just be one... like, sometimes I want sukiya.
Uh-huh.
Sukiyaki, sorry. And it's like a sweet version of that, basically, with beef. And you can't just go eat it on your own. Oftentimes, you need, like, two people.
Yeah, yeah.
They only serve this portion for two people.
Yeah, and so we're like, can we all share the one? And they were like, not really. And so then they went back to the back room and came out and said, yes, but very special. This is, like, a very special exception.
This is so Japanese. They're really saying no to you, but Japanese have a hard time. It's a stereotype, but in general, they won't just say no. They'll, like, you're supposed to get the hint. But, but if you don't get the hint, then... anyway, they did let five of you share one.
Yeah.
Wasn't it small?
We weren't that hungry because it was like around 11 o'clock and we had all just eaten a big breakfast. So we just wanted to try it. Yeah. And so anyway, then we got our bill and they charged us for two.
Hmm.
And so we did not expect that, but we paid it anyway.
Do you remember how much it was?
It was $48.
Under $10 per person?
Yeah. So we paid that, and then we went back, and that was a really fun day just because it was, like, very serendipitous. We went in thinking one thing, we're going to go to the stables and watch this stuff, and we actually got to meet some sumo wrestlers and then get chunking. It actually turned out to be a really, really awesome.
Cool. I've heard that a lot, that you don't have to be – I mean, if you just want to see some sumo and kind of get the vibe and see kind of how they live, you don't have to set up all that stuff, you know? If you're really set on seeing a match or watch the training, then obviously you have to do that. But I've heard it's pretty cool if you just rock up there and you can kind of get the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts on Tokyo before we move to Kyoto?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we went to Tokyo Tower, and that was really cool. So you'd recommend going there? Yeah. I mean, again, I didn't pay for it.
So... what is the red and white one?
Yeah, the big red.
Because now that used to be the thing to go see.
Uh-huh.
Now there's a new one. I'm blanking on the name right now, but it's like twice as tall and
No one cares about this one anymore. Sadly, it's been forgotten. What's the other one called? Nah, I feel ashamed. Well, I'm not super in the towers, as you can tell. But yeah, it was fun to go see that.
That was cool. Yeah, I mean, just to see the whole city because
you
that went, was
did you go up top?
Yes, mm-hmm. But the reason I liked it that a lot was because our whole group went together to the tower, mm-hmm. and then they said, "All right, now everyone find your way home." Like they didn't lead us back, so we all mm-hmm. had to figure out.
And stay so together, or you
groups of us, like we broke up into groups, and like we all just kind of figured it out on our own and stuff.
Do you like? I really like walking around Tokyo, like just seeing little small neighborhoods.
It was really cool
for such a big city. There's all these little quiet pockets, you know.
Yeah. It was really cool because every block had a different culture and a different kind of vibe to it, and mm-hmm. it was just you know every, you know. 100 yards, there was kind of like a new angle to it.
That's the thing about the city is that I took you to my side of Tokyo, like mm-hmm. where we always stay, all the stuff you did.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Akihabara before.
Yeah.
But I've never stayed anywhere near there. And everything else you've done, I've never done. I've mm-hmm. been to Tokyo, I don't know, 10 or 20 times, you know?
Uh-huh.
You can go there and just, depending on what neighborhood you stay in, it's its own little city,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it is.
I feel you could go there like 10 times and get 10 different trips, which is,
yep.
You can't say the same for Osaka, you know?
Yeah.
There's not that much to do in 5 days. I mean, there's enough to do for 5 days, but you'd do the same thing again probably next time.
Yeah.
Cool.
I would say my favorite thing about Tokyo by far, not by far, but like my favorite thing was going to a baseball game.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be there. It could be anywhere in Japan. You like right. Japanese baseball games?
Yes,
yeah.
yes, for sure. It was us, the Cebu Lions. Mm-hmm. And they, the coolest thing about it was just the energy that's there. It's kind of a mix between like a soccer game, a football game, and a baseball game in terms of like the audience participation because like they had all the chants for every single baseball player that went up. They have a band that's playing, like a pit band type of thing, with trumpets and drums.
And you were sitting near them, right?
And no, but I walked over to them, okay. And I sat in the like seats, not like just right behind them.
So you could move your seat?
No, I just like just you can walk around wherever you want.
Okay.
And so I just stood behind them for a little bit, and it was just so fun. Like they were having like a lot of fun, and the guy next to me who like goes to every single game. It seemed like they have towels.
Mm-hmm.
Every player has their own special towel, and he was like waving it around. They have these like big balloons that they take and wave, and then they let them go. And so the seventh
very interactive,
inning.
Right?
So interactive and so fun, and
those balloons are really funny.
Yeah. And so it was just a very odd, because I like going to baseball games anyway. Mm. And so
you're in band growing up.
Yeah, I was in band. I played the trumpet and it just felt really fun.
A lot of people like, you know, non-Japanese who live here mm-hmm. love it. I've never been, but
yeah,
you know, my friends go every year.
I
love
it.
Number of times.
Yeah. That goes down as my favorite. Pretty much my favorite thing that I did while I was here.
Well, next year when you come back, we'll have to go to the Hanshin Tigers game. That's our local team, and they're very, maybe it's just some local pride or something like that, but it's the most crazy fan base for any baseball team, I think,
really?
For pro baseball. They say the most passionate ones are actually high school baseball here. High school baseball is
really
crazy
wow.
thing in itself. And the big tournament is actually at the Hanshin Tigers Stadium.
Oh.
But yeah, we should see a Hanshin game next time.
I'd totally be down for that. Just a couple of other things we did. We saw the big, great Buddha.
Yep, Kamakura.
In Kamakura, mm-hmm. which was really cool. We saw...
you saw Totoro. That was one of the things you realized you have to make a reservation for.
Yeah,
I don't know if you ever talked about this.
Or the Ghibli Museum.
Yeah, I've been to the Ghibli Museum about 5 times out. Even before I had my son, I went a lot. Mm-hmm. I really like it. I'm not the craziest Ghibli fan. I definitely really like Ghibli movies.
Yeah.
But I'm not, like, crazy into it. I far prefer it to Disney. But it's a great place. But you do... It's very, very difficult to book. Using travel agents is probably the best bet.
Okay.
Even for me living here, they're really strict on the time. Like, I can't... You can only get it 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
But then it sells out really fast.
Yeah.
So, even if I know I'm going to go in 6 months, you have to remind yourself, like, okay, well, in 4 months, I need to go. And,
yeah.
But now you can do it online. You need, you know, Japanese ability to do that. Mm-hmm. Before, you couldn't do it online. Even just 2 years ago, you had to go in person.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a little bit of a letdown, but at the same time.
I've been there so many times and seen tourists outside, and, like, hey, how did you get in there? Yeah. And I'm so always so sad to break it to them. Like, yeah. Oh, you gotta get tickets. Oh, do you think there's any left? And I was like, no, man. And they're like, I came all the way from Spain. And I almost at this point, because I've been so many times, it's really cheap. It's only like $15 to get in. Just give it to them. They look so sad.
I know. I felt sad when I saw all the Mario Kart people driving around and they said you have to have an international driver's license to try it. So it seems to be a big fad right now.
So there's some disappointments.
Yeah.
You got on the bullet train.
Yes.
People love the bullet train. Some people say it's overrated. What do you think? Bullet train, cool. Shinkansen.
I thought it was great. I barely noticed, like, if it was a luxurious way to travel because they had Wi-Fi. I just worked on some websites the whole time.
There was Wi-Fi on there?
Yeah. Okay. It was only an hour long, really. Just over an hour. It went by very quickly.
It's definitely it's 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours. From Tokyo to Kyoto, yeah.
See, that's how fast it flew by.
Yeah.
It really just felt like it was great. I enjoyed.
Did you see Mount Fuji?
No, it was too cloudy.
All right, that's always fun.
Yeah. But
it's a little like old. Like, I love it. It's my favorite way to travel for sure. No security, right? You just walk on, you sit down, you're there so fast. Smooth ride. If I look out the window, I get sick, but you don't feel any shaking or anything. I would expect it to be a little more new. Yeah. It's a little bit on the older side at this point. They're building this new one that's going to cut the time in half.
Oh,
it's still like 5 years off, I think.
It was great. It was a great way to travel, for sure. Like, I can't imagine driving 5 hours to get there with with that many people.
It might even be 8 by car. Anyway, so.
And then the first thing we did, we had some.
Kyoto. Got to Kyoto, right? Yes, that's your second destination.
Got some okonomiyaki away.
You've been to Kyoto before.
Yes.
You knew what you're in for.
Yeah.
What was the group feeling about Kyoto? Did they have any expectations?
We were explained to that it was a more historic city that even in the bombing of Hiroshima and the bombings that happened in World War II, they protected Kyoto and all the historic temples and buildings. And so we were all ready for it to be more historic and more traditional, and they explained, or our local guide explained a lot about the history of Kyoto to us, and she was wearing a kimono. When she welcomed us, so it just felt more like proper and like we kind of knew what we were in for a little bit.
Kyoto is famous for being a very formal city. Could you feel that when you were there?
Yes, for sure. It was pristine roads, like
cleaner than Tokyo. You felt like
For sure. Like even the cement on the ground looked like it had freshly been like waxed and like washed and like it felt very clean.
I will say, I own a lot of shoes. I like shoes a lot.
Uh-huh.
I've had the easiest time keeping my shoes clean in Japan rather than anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think in Osaka, the streets there are a little bit dirtier than other places, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I live in Kobe, and yeah, your shoes stay very clean here.
Yeah, it was great. We ended up playing, doing some karaoke that night.
Okay. You've done it before?
I had done it before, but the time I did it was in Korea.
Yeah. He said some people were surprised that it wasn't in front of a big crowd.
Yeah, they assumed it was going to be kind of like we do in the West with, you know, a crowd full of people, but it was just our room. I read the menu wrong, and so I thought it was going to cost $25 a person, but it ended up costing like $50 a person. And
I'll say be careful who you go to karaoke with. Like, I mean, yeah, if you go with a good friend or whatever, money's not a big deal between friends. But sometimes you go to, like, coworkers or people on a student trip, you're not, like, best friends with people.
Yeah.
It gets pretty expensive karaoke, especially if drinks are involved.
Yeah.
And at the end, if people have been drinking, people aren't always, like, the most, I don't know, polite when they're, like, paying. They don't remember. Right. And I've seen people get stuck with, like, $100, $200 bills, you know, and I always hope that they get that money back from other people. I've been in that position. I know, like,
every one of us was just very like, oh my gosh, we didn't realize this. And
can
we
put weird in on a really good night sometimes.
It did. It really did. But in the end, I was like, did everyone have fun? And they were like, yes. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm sorry about that. But like, it just pays to be able to know the language more than we did, you know. In a way, it was a lesson learned too.
Yeah.
In that, like, really, even asking like how much will this cost at the end, kind of thing, like, or just being more aware about like how much things will cost. Like, it's easy to you know, feel like you can't ask those questions if you don't know the language well. So
right, if you don't do All You Can Drink, you know, it's about half that price. It'd be like $25 a person.
Yeah,
were you there 1 hour, 2 hours?
We were there 2 hours, and we extended it for another half hour, and everybody agreed to it, and so we all felt like somewhat responsible for but we all had fun. We all had a great time. And then,
what was the best song that was sung that night?
Gosh, the last song we sang
was it Bohemian Rhapsody?
That was famous the first ending. Song. We sang Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You.
That's
and
a good
we
one.
All joined up together.
What is it? It's got some sea life flying at us here.
It's like a beetle that flew.
All right. Bye. So you sang Whitney Houston.
And,
I usually do Boys to Men, End of the Road.
That's a good one. Closing time.
Yeah, I love karaoke. So you did some of that.
We then went to a temple,
the Thousand Dori Temple.
Yeah, yep. The
Many Gates.
Many Gates Temple, and that was really cool. The Fox Temple, they called it too.
We went on a Sunday to Kyoto. Kyoto's famous for, even though it's a small city, tourism in terms of concentration is crazy. Tokyo's a big city, so it can hold a lot of people. You know,
yeah.
Kyoto's not really a big city, so. You went there on a Sunday. You feel the stuff was really crowded?
It was so crowded. Yeah. Underline, bold, italicized, so crowded.
I can't. I'm at a point where I just don't do it, you know?
yeah.
Even
it was
on
a
Monday or Tuesday. It depends what season. Now, you are in, like, low season, too, because it is the rainy season. And, like, Japanese schools and stuff get out in July. So you didn't have, like, the local crowds, so...
Yeah,
that was low season, but still on a Sunday.
It was just crowded. I mean, even walking through all those gates, it was just a ton of people, and it was hard to walk through. I enjoyed it.
If you come for cherry blossoms or you come for fall, changing in the leaves, those are like really high seasons, just so you know. So if you hate crowds, try to look up off seasons. You know, June would definitely be one. May would be one. Okay, so you went to Gyan and you saw a geisha. You're not supposed to take pictures of them,
right?
Did you?
Our guide told us not to take pictures. If we take a picture, to be discreet about it. And
few
that walked by, we did. We took a lot of pictures.
Did they know? Did they get geisha?
They didn't know. No, they just walked right by. They were very like one track minded.
They're like celebrities.
Yeah, and we took a few photos. So
geisha were good. You did karaoke, yeah.
Yep.
Did you see? I bet you saw the Thousand Temples you mentioned.
Yeah.
Anything? Did you go to Kyu Musidera, the water temple?
We did not go to the water temple. No.
Okay. So I know you went to Nijo Castle. That's the last place when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
Was that worthwhile?
It was cool.
Would you recommend going there?
If you're really into history, yes. we'd gone through so many different temples at that point that it was good. It was very good.
What's the difference between a shrine and a temple? Go.
Buddhist versus Hinduism? Is that right?
Shintoism.
Yeah.
I can never tell if I'm at a shrine or a temple sometimes. Well, oftentimes. So I just call it a sherpa.
Yeah. This one is a castle. It was very interesting to just kind of hear about the history of each room, and they had a lot of Bengal tigers on the walls, and it was good.
But yeah, you agree, you hit a certain point with the temples where you can only see so many, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is interesting that I think you got a lot of that out of your system. You guys went to Asakusa and Tokyo, or some of your students did at least. Did you see any temples in Tokyo?
Yeah.
Okay. So by the time you got to Kyoto, the place that's like best for seeing that, you're already kind of tired of it.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I would definitely recommend, if you're gonna be like most people, and if you're a real history buff, like the other professor you're with, like, he seemed like he could keep going to those, right?
Yes.
He's really into it?
Yes, yeah. He went to even the Kanji Museum.
The Kanji Museum, which sounds just to me like going to the Japanese class. But, yeah, Kyoto does have a lot of museums, a lot of really small museums. It's a good place. Any final thoughts on your trip?
On the trip, totally?
Yeah, trip total.
Yeah, a couple things. So...
What did you learn about Japan on this trip? That's what I want to get to.
Okay, well, number one, it was cool to see Japan through the eyes of students, since people who had not gone before, because I had just gone the one time and picked up a lot, and then it was cool to see it through their eyes, like, just the things like how quiet it was on the subways. I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah.
And so we kind of talked about that just as a group, like, you know, how it is different when you go into a new culture and, you know, to be respectful, even though you want to be loud on the subway and talk to your friends, like, just to not really be as loud as they had been doing. And at one point, somebody looked at us and we were talking amongst each other, and they looked at each other and they were like, oh, tourists. Of course, they were tourists as well.
They said it in English.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they were from, it sounded like Germany or something. But yeah, just to be more conscious of that. And then just the cleanliness of the streets and stuff like that, they definitely noticed that. And the fact that you cannot throw your trash anywhere. Like, they don't have public, you know, garbage. Trash cans for the most part. And so those things were, you know, discussed among the group. And so it was cool to see it through their eyes, too. I guess for me, I just noticed I felt like I could get my way around a little bit more. The last time I was here, you pretty much did everything in terms of, like, the subways and train system and all that public transportation. Here, I did a little bit more traveling on my own and, like, kind of leading groups and stuff. And so just kind of navigating the system made a little bit more sense to me. It helped the first time.
Is it difficult? Should people be concerned about that? Or
Yes, it is, because literally it is all nothing's in... Some things are in English, for sure.
I would say if you've traveled before or you've taken subways before, it's less challenging. But I imagine you guys in your situation where it's people who don't haven't done that maybe
the
before.
The best part was just literally Google Maps, because it tells you which train to get on at what time, what, you know, and it was very...
I still use it to this day.
Yeah, every day. It's so wonderful. Like, and what did help is a lot of them had Wi-Fi hotspot plans. Like, they paid for a hotspot for
the
whole time.
So, talk about that. Where did they get that?
They had to get
that... At the hotel airport?
Yeah, from the hotel airport.
Which one? Those are two separate.
From the airport.
Okay.
And so
did they arrange it ahead of time, or they just show up there and get it?
They had to arrange it ahead of time. They had to order it. And then when they got to the airport, they had to go pick them up. Then when they're done, they mail it back.
Would you do that next time?
I think I might. Just because it was hard to rely on Wi-Fi everywhere. And there is Wi-Fi everywhere, but you had to have the passwords. And then just logging on to each station's Wi-Fi is kind of spotty. It's not a good, reliable source, especially if you're trying to, like, communicate with a whole group of people and get there.
You're on a budget. It's doable.
Yes.
But if you have the money to spend, it might be worth it.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But, like you had said, like we had said earlier, going to... traveling in big groups, like 13 or so, can be kind of tricky. So breaking up into groups of like 3 and 4 was a really good idea. Yeah, especially when we went to like Ryogoku and stuff, and had the hot pot of Chunkanabe.
I'm a bit antisocial anyway, but I almost never, if I'm invited out in a big group in Japan, I almost always say no.
Really?
Yeah. Because it means you're just going to this big franchise, the food's never going to be that good. And if you want to go to any of the cool spots, four under, that's the magic number for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is just knowing Japanese. Like, I know a tiny, tiny, tiny bit, but I still got a little bit confused when it was time to pay for, like, our karaoke and understanding, like, how much prices are and stuff. So just knowing a little bit more than we knew would have been helpful. You live and learn, for sure. But, I think I would... If I come next year, I'm going to definitely learn some more Japanese.
Right. Hold you to that.
Yeah.
Give us a Japanese lesson next year.
Yeah, we'll see.
I would have liked to see more of the music scene here too.
Okay.
We did a lot of temples and shrines visits, but and a lot of sightseeing stuff. Mm-hmm. But just seeing more of the subculture, I think, would have been more fun in some ways. So
I can arrange for that next
time.
Yes,
you can. This is the podcast for that.
That's
for
right.
Sure.
Final question for you is...
My final answer.
You could live anywhere in Japan. You've been to Tokyo, you've been to Kyoto, you've been to Osaka, you've been to Kobe.
Yeah.
Which of those places would you live and why?
I would probably live in Kyoto.
Kyoto. Okay.
Just because it really had a lot of the beauty of Japan and the tradition of it, as well as the big city. It kind of had it all.
What's the beauty of Japan?
The nature. You know,
so
like,
you think there's good nature?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's some good, like when we went to the temples and shrines and stuff, a lot of hills and forest areas and trails and stuff like that. We did see that for sure in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like it was a little bit more so in Kyoto. And then, yeah, it was big city. It was nature. And it seemed to be kind of centrally located for like other excursions, like to Osaka, and of course Kobe and stuff. So yeah, I liked it.
I think Kyoto.
I think Kyoto is the one.
Where's last?
Last?
Yeah.
Of the places I visited?
Yep.
Good question. I hadn't thought about that one. I like them all. I would say
it's between Osaka and Kobe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Osaka would probably be the last.
Yeah, why?
I guess the place... As we went in Osaka, we're
so
a little
that's
bit grungier.
Like John to Shinsekai, south of Osaka. We started in Umeda, so you got to see what's known as the nicer part.
Yeah.
And we rode down south past Namba, Tennoji, Shinsekai, to the rougher place. I purposely took them there just to see that side, so you can see all sides of Japan, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe it kind of gives you an appreciation for Kyoto these other places, right?
Yep.
So yeah, I think those places are interesting too. We ate at a kushikatsu place.
Yes.
Did we talk about that already?
No, we didn't.
Okay. We ate kushikatsu in Osaka, which is fried stuff on sticks, basically, right?
Yeah, almost anything. Veggies, meat. It was really cool. I liked the fact that there was no cell phones allowed.
It's one of the reasons, this is their signs. There's nothing in English in this place except...
No mobile phones.
And I don't think that's just pictures. You know, sometimes you see places that say don't take pictures here. But this was literally, there's no one in the restaurant on their phone. It was right. Part of the reason I took you there was, one, I think maybe you don't have that back home.
Mm-hmm.
And two is, like, being, like, a social media group where you're probably on your phones a lot for this trip. I thought it might be good to get a break from that. But it was weird.
It was
that aspect.
A little bit, because I felt a little bit intimidated.
Before we went in, John was like, let me do my last phone stuff before I go in.
Gotta text somebody real quick. Yeah, because I didn't want to pull it out while I was there and then get called out, because that would be pretty rough.
Yeah.
We did get called out.
We did get in trouble. And I've been kushikatsu somewhere around 20 times, I would imagine. And they're famously, you know, no double dipping. I told John before we went there, all right, don't double dip. And I thought, you know, I was being a good guide. And then a guy comes up to me, like, 5 skewers in.
Yeah.
And tells us that...
Explains that you're supposed to... You can't put it on a plate and then dip it. You have to put it in... Dip it, then put it on your plate, and then eat it from
the
plate.
They give it to you on this, like, tray, and you can't take it off that tray and put it on your plate and then dip it. You take off the tray, dip, put it in. Why?
Because if you put food on your plate, it could mix with the other drippage that's on your
plate.
You've
already eaten half
bites
of...
And then if you dip that in, it's kind
of
like double dipping,
which
I can understand. So they say, take your fried skewer, dip it first, and then put it on your plate.
Yeah. So this place is pretty grimy.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
Kind of a flea market type of feel,
right,
honestly.
So it's interesting that they are so strict. And again, I've eaten this before. I'm sure now I know. I'll never do it the other way because I don't want to, like, you know, break the rules. I'm not Parisian, you might say. But we just met a Parisian guy who told us that Parisians break the rules. No disrespect. And yeah, so we went down there, we saw some Shinsekai, ate some real Osaka food, kushikatsu, and John didn't like it. We didn't want to live there. Yeah, well, grimy, right?
Yeah, a little bit. It was just the rougher side of life compared to everything else that I had seen. So yeah, I loved everything about everything we've done.
All right, let's last question. Food. Same thing.
Yeah.
Best thing you ate on the trip. Worst thing you ate on the trip.
Gosh.
All right, worst thing you had. You already told me was. Do you need my help?
Yeah.
Convenience store food, you said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the worst thing that I had was I was just not wanting to go out to eat, and I went to 7-Eleven, and I got a tray of meat, some kind of meat. I think it was a pork dish, and then rice.
On rice, yeah.
And then I just thought I was going to eat it cold, but they asked if I'd like to heat it up, and I said, absolutely. And so they heated it up, and it was pretty good. Even for the worst dish that I had here, it was quite good. So that
speaks to say you think Japanese food is good?
Yes, absolutely. The best thing I had was a ramen bowl of ramen. I think it was because I was very hungry, and also we just stopped at this ramen shop on the way in when I was in Akihabara, and some of the students and I went to this very, very good ramen place. I can even tell you.
You use the ticket machine to buy it. You like that? You said
it? Yep. It was a great way to do it. So
you
overall,
know what kind of ramen was?
It was pork.
Pork ramen.
Yeah. That's it. Pork ramen.
And you said egg.
And yeah, the egg is always the best part for me.
Many people would agree with that.
Yeah. So all in all, there great success. Go. It's
so
great when you get paid to go to Japan.
Kyoto one day, and you're gonna eat tonkatsu ramen, and you'll be living your best life.
Living the high life. Yep.
That's great, man. Look forward to that. Anything you want to plug?
Plug?
Yeah.
I would like to plug SJMC Japan.
Okay. That's the Instagram account?
Yep.
.com?
Yep. Yep. We have a .com.
SJMCJapan.com.
Yep. SJMC stands for School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Okay. SJMCJapan.com. We have all of our blog posts on that site. All of our students have been posting, and they're going to be typing up their stories on feature stories and the cuisine and the culture and all kinds of stuff.
Put this in the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're looking to travel here, you can see some travel bloggy type stuff from some students, what they thought were cool, where they went.
Yep.
Their
thoughts. They even
and
went to Universal Studios. They have a write-up
on
that.
Did you post on there?
I did not.
Okay. Not allowed.
Nope. No, it's a student work only blog.
All right. Well, that'll be great.
Yeah. Thanks for the interview, and it's great to be on the show again.
Yeah. Till next year.
I'll see you next year. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
한 번이라도 해봤나요? 해봤다는 게 여모양 몇 꼴인가요? 아직 아저씨들 득다시고 배부르죠. 아저씨들 우리나라 사람 만나요. 비고 비고.